It's a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll talk about how Pat Riley plans on improving the Heat's roster in a game of buy or sell.
Then we'll open up the mailbag and talk about a Kawhi Leonard trade before taking a look at some coaching searches from around the league. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romello, a credentialed NBA writer who has covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for Fansided, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomello13.
On today's show, we'll take some listener questions about potential Hassan Whiteside deals and check in on some head coach openings around the league. But let's start with a game or buy or sell. David, we didn't get a chance to talk about Pat Riley's press conference on here yet. So I'll read you a quote, and then you tell me if you're buying or selling. Pretty simple.
Sounds good.
This first one. Hassan and Spo don't have an issue, but they need to talk it out and come to an agreement.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the press conference, in my opinion, was Pat Riley constantly hedging his bets. It seemed like for every statement he'd make, he'd offer something completely contradictory to what he just made. So as far as whether or not this one is something worth buying or selling, I'm buying it in that I think they do need to come to an agreement. I think at this point in time, they do have an issue, though. So I'm not necessarily buying the first part of the sentence. I'm buying the second part, where I understand that Riley understands that Spoelstra and Whiteside are obviously conflicted with one another. Like, there's just no way. As for all that we heard, that there was nothing but positivity from Spoelstra about Whiteside, the reality is that I think he's displeased with his overall effort. Riley tried to make excuses for him, and then again, hedged his bets by saying, well, he needs to come into better shape, and a lot of it is psychological, et cetera. He needs to come here better prepared. But even at the same time, look, he actually said at one point, he says, I'm not making any excuses for Hassan. And then he went to list a litany of injuries that impacted him over the course of the season. So it seemed like he was doing nothing but making excuses. So to me, I think, you know, there's been plenty of evidence to see that, you know, Hassan and Spoelstra aren't necessarily on the same page right now. And I don't know if there's a way to fix it. I don't know if a conversation is going to be enough. Like, we expect Whiteside to be able to handle a lesser role because I think that's the way the league is trending. And I think that's where he's most effective. You and I have talked about this on a number of occasions. So if he's willing to make that adjustment, then he's a perfect fit for this team. But I think that's going to be a difficult one to hammer out.
It's going to have to be very Greg Popovich, LaMarcus Aldridge summit meeting-ish, right? Where it's, look, this is the role you want. This is the role we need you to play. Let's try to find a middle ground here. Maybe we'll get you some post touches earlier in the game. We need you to screen better so you can roll harder to the rim. Yeah. You have that conversation with him over the summer, but it just feels like that conversation has been had so many times with Hassan Whiteside, that him and Spoelstra, especially this last season, you know, would talk and try to figure it out, and then Whiteside would come out for 2, 3, 4 games and look great, and then he would have one bad game and it would all go to hell again. And it just, I don't know how much more babysitting Spoelstra can do. And look, Whiteside at his peak, it's worth it. I mean, if he is playing that well, it's worth it. But at some point, there comes an opportunity cost of spending that much time and dealing with the headache that is Hassan Whiteside, that, you know, you could, instead of trying to figure out ways to incorporate Whiteside, you could be, you know, rearranging your offense around the skills of a Kelly Olynyk, or coaching up and developing Bam Adebayo a little bit more and getting him more playing time. So at some point, there's an opportunity cost that has to come. But that said, going back to Riley's quote here, they do need, regardless of whether or not Hassan Whiteside is on the team or not, they need to come to an agreement, because there is a very high chance, there's a high likelihood that the Heat aren't able to deal Whiteside. And I said this on Monday when I did the solo pod, David, and kind of reacted to it. I said, either Pat Riley is being extremely unrealistic and rigid in his wishes to maintain a traditional center on the roster, or he's being extremely realistic and already understands that there is no deal for us on Whiteside, that he's already been on the phones for the last year or so, and he knows that there's no way to trade him on that contract. So either way, I'm buying what Riley is saying there, that they do need to talk about it, just as a plan B, I suppose, and try to come to some sort of middle ground. But plan A would be trading him.
Can I just talk about the fact, and we haven't really discussed it on this podcast, but the fact that Philadelphia looks so bad against Boston, and that Al Horford, somebody that I think you and I both, Miami should have signed a couple years ago instead of Hassan Whiteside, looks so impressive versus the 76ers. That's what it looks like, folks, when a center sets a good screen for your ball handlers. Like Terry Rozier shouldn't be able to get 30 points against the Philadelphia 76ers and one of the top defenses in the league. But it certainly helps when your forward or center player is setting such great screens for you. I mean, just that kind of versatility. I know Al Horford is a lot like vanilla ice cream. Well, here's your clue for you all. Vanilla ice cream is pretty damn tasty. And he's pretty damn good as a player. Like, he is underrated. Maybe he's not the superstar that a lot of people think he should be, or maybe he's getting paid too much. I'll tell you what, I'd rather have Horford's salary in the books than Whiteside sulking on the bench.
100%. I mean, that's the fact that anybody would even question who the better player is isn't like watch a basketball game and figure and then tell me who you'd rather have. I mean, I'd rather have like Kelly Olynyk is like Al Horford light. Like, I would rather have Olynyk than playing and starting than Hassan Whiteside at this point. Just with the things that Olynyk. Ben Falk of Cleaning the Glass came out with a piece, I think last week, about the issues with Hassan Whiteside, and he even mentioned Miami's defensive rating is better with Kelly Olynyk on the floor than it is Whiteside, which is shocking because you don't look at him as a rim protector, and he doesn't protect the rim especially well. But what he makes up for is in steals and causing turnovers and switchability and limiting 3-point shots and getting on the perimeter and stuff like that. So again, I would rather have Olynyk. You know, that said, I also look at a guy like Jonas Valanciunas, who's playing well in Toronto, and I tweeted this from the Locked On Heat Twitter account last night, that the color, during the program, the TNT analyst basically said, you know what you can expect from Jonas Valanciunas night in and night out. He's going to play 20 to 25 minutes, he'll get you, 13 points and 13 rebounds, and he'll set a couple of nice screens, and that's what you get. And I was like, I would take 13 points and 13 rebounds and 3 or 4 screen assists a night over whatever it is that we're getting from Whiteside. I would rather Whiteside just do that than ever have a 20-point game in a season. Like, I would be fine with that because you at least know what you're getting out of him. And for the Heat, they have no idea what they're getting out of Hassan Whiteside on a game-to-game basis, which, again, I don't know how much a conversation between him and Spo is going to fix that. So that's something that they're going to have to deal with. Let's go to this next quote from Pat Riley. Buy or sell, David. I'm not going to break this team up. I'm going to make this team better.
I'm selling it. There is no point in this. There is nothing in this statement that I agree with. Like, I think he would break this team up in a heartbeat. And as far as making it better, well, good luck to you. Like, I think, everybody looks at Pat Riley, and it's kind of ironic, or maybe it's purposeful. Like, I Pat Riley spoke at the start of the press conference, and for those of you who haven't heard it, I know that we gave our takes on it. You should probably try and carve out an hour of your day to go listen through Riley's BS. But he starts off talking about the 1995 trade to bring Alonzo Mourning, and then brings up throughout several points of the press conference the acquisition of Gary Payton, Jason Williams acquisition, Billy Owens, he mentions 3 or 4 times, Tim Hardaway's transformation here to an all-NBA player, etc. It's like, he was listing his greatest hits while pointing out the fact at the same time that the last few years have been, pretty bad for him. And I just don't see how he can make this team better. Like that's impossible. As you just pointed out, there's probably a good chance that he's tried to trade Hassan already, knowing that he's not a good fit for this roster or for the NBA at all at this point. And there's no takers. There's no takers for a lot of these salaries and a lot of these contracts. I mean, we hope that Deion Waiters comes back at full strength. We hope he can be the kind of player who adds something offensively in particular to a team that lacked a scoring punch for most of the year. But as far as improving it, I just don't see how there's any possibility of doing so. Like, you're not going to get a whale. You're not going to get a transformative player, to use Riley's quote. Sure, everybody's available. That's the whole thing, too. He's like, I'm not breaking this team up, but everybody on this team is absolutely tradable if you bring me the right name. So it's like, okay. Who's the right name? Is it right. Kawhi Leonard? Is it, Paul George? Is it LeBron James?
That was my question. That was my question. And he kept mentioning, like, I want to keep the core of this group together. And I was trying to kind of read the tea leaves and see, like, okay, who do you view as the core? Because Spoelstra routinely played 10 or 11 guys, and there's no way you view that as the core. So who is the core? And, he spoke really highly of guys like Wayne Ellington, who's not even under contract. James Johnson, Goran Dragic, talked about Josh Richardson quite a bit. I'm like, Kelly Olynyk, he talked highly of. If that's the core, then is a guy like Waiters and Winslow and Tyler, are those the guys that are expendable of Bam? Are those the guys you're trying to basically package and move together? Because I don't know how much you're going to get by moving those guys. But, yeah, I kind of like, I'm not going to break this team up, but I'm going to make this team better. At the end of the day, I think if the right deal, I think maybe what he meant was I'm not actively just going to break this team up for the sake of breaking it up, but I'm going to listen. And that's the only thing that makes sense, right? Because you're right, because otherwise it's completely contradictory. I'm not breaking it up, but I'm going to make this team better. Well, which one is it, Riley? Because you're not going to be able to not move anybody, and you can't sign anybody because you have no cap space, and you can't draft anybody because you got no draft pick. So I don't know how you're going to make this team better. And apparently he wants to bring back Wayne Ellington and doesn't give a crap about the luxury tax, which I think is hilarious.
Well, that's what he kept hinting at Andy working his magic, Andy Ellisberg.
And Andy's in the corner just sweating. He's like, dude, what do you want from me? Well, you wanted me to pay $19 million anyway, to Tyler Johnson? Yeah, he's probably always sweating. All right.
But you know, I got to bring up a point here. Like, you know, it's a different league nowadays than it was in 1995 when he acquired Alonzo Mourning. Like, you can't make a swing for the fences and get a superstar on your team, because right now every superstar player is so invested in creating or preserving their legacy, and that unfortunately includes a championship. Like, if Alonzo knew he was coming here in Miami and wasn't really going to compete for a championship, which he wasn't, like, he wanted to get paid, he wanted to get away from Larry Johnson, and the trade to Miami facilitated both of those needs. But the reality is, like, if Alonzo Mourning was playing in today's league, he would have had to have won a championship in order to be viewed as one of the all-time greats. The fact that he eventually did at the end of his career, that's fine. But you can't acquire a player now, a superstar player now, without, you know, him wanting to, you know, win a championship. And if you acquire a superstar, you're going to trade away a lot of those core pieces like you were hinting at. And so that sets back that timeline several years. So yeah, you can get your superstar this year. Maybe somebody's disgruntled enough and he's under contract for a long time so that you can have him here for a few years. But guess what? You're not going to be able to build this team back right away, because you're going to have to trade away a number of your young assets in order to acquire said superstar.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Chris Paul got traded for peanuts, and that's only because he wanted to go to Houston. You look at a guy like LeBron who, yeah, he's got free agent options, but Brian Windhorst said this the other day, I think on Zach Lowe's podcast, that, like, to think that LeBron is limited to what free agency is and is limited to what teams have cap space is completely ridiculous. If LeBron tells the Cavaliers, I'm leaving, so trade me here, I want to go here, then it's not going to matter who has cap space, because they're just going to trade whatever it takes to get LeBron. And they'll make, if he wants to go to Milwaukee, they'll just trade John Henson, Matthew Dellavedova. Boom. You got Giannis and LeBron on the same team in Milwaukee. That's all it's going to take. So if for whatever reason LeBron wants to go to Milwaukee, just as an example, I don't think there's any way that happens. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but you're right. I mean, the Heat need to kind of have that foundational piece, that guy that everybody wants to play with, in order to attract other free agents. And maybe it takes a fringe move that turns into a big move. You know, maybe it takes finding the next James Harden or finding the next Victor Oladipo, whoever it might be, in order to get somebody that people want to play with. Who knows? Or maybe somebody just wants to go to Miami. There's always that opportunity. Okay, one of our listeners submitted a list of trade ideas, speaking of trades, that we're going to pick apart after this quick break. The playoffs are here, and just like the Miami Heat, it's time to step up your game. If you run a company and you're unhappy with the results from traditional advertising online or in print, make a big-time adjustment by advertising with us here on Locked On Heat. We've already got national brands advertising on the show, but it's also a great opportunity for South Florida businesses to connect with local Heat fans. You've heard about the studies already, how podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers, and how the number of people listening to podcasts continue to grow every year, heck, every month. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us here at Locked On Heat. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable, and they're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and your money. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. That's lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. Back with Locked On Heat, let's open up the mailbag and answer some listener questions, David. This one comes from RJ, a Patreon supporter, who writes in, I know you guys are anti-Hassan Whiteside, but I'm anti-Goran Dragic. And if the Heat want to upgrade the roster, he is the one that needs to be traded.
I will never disagree with one of our Patreon supporters, but I got to be honest with you, I'm conflicted by this statement here. I, you know, I think a lot of the Hassan Whiteside issue is a one of effort. Like, Goran might be, he might not be as talented a point guard, and especially at this point in time in his career, he might not be as impactful as he once was, but I don't think anybody ever questions his effort. And I think that's the issue with Hassan Whiteside. So as far as a potential trade is concerned, and I know we'll get into some more Whiteside trade options in a minute, you know, I think Hassan still has more value because of his youth and because rim protection is still a commodity that a lot of NBA teams lack and would prefer to have on their roster. And he does provide that, you know, infrequently and only when he's engaged. But yes, he can theoretically provide it. Whereas Goran is probably a mid-tier point guard in this league with so many superstar point guards around, you know, guys that haven't even made the All-Star game in a number of years. Look, Goran made the All-Star. That's fine. Ben Simmons is arguably a better point guard than Goran Dragic is.
Arguably.
Didn't make the All-Star team. Well, you know what I'm saying. you know, guys like Kemba Walker, you know, or John Wall that were always seemingly on the fringes and couldn't really break through as far as being viewed as an elite point guards, you know, theoretically, they're better than Goran Dragic. So, I mean, I'm just saying that the point guard position is stacked across the league. Goran's kind of a mid-tier talent there. I mean, he's a fine player, though, and I think he adds a lot of value to this team.
I got to be honest. I think the Heat got to upgrade both.
That's fair.
Like,
I personally like Goran Dragic.
Same.
I like his playing style, too.
I've got a signed photograph of Goran Dragic that I look at every time we're recording this podcast. I am a big fan of Goran Dragic, but it is there. You know, if the Heat are the Heat got into so many issues throughout the season where they would just hit scoring ruts, and so often Goran Dragic wasn't the guy who was able to get them out of it. They need a lead guard who can get them out of it. Dwayne Wade can't do it all the time. He can only do it once every month, you know, at best. Like, I just, maybe Deion Waiters could be that guy next year, and you're able to pair Dragic and Waiters together in the backcourt. I just, you know, Dragic is 31 years old. He's on the other end of that career. I think his best basketball is, quite frankly, behind him. I really think he's got value, but unless Miami could find a go-to scorer, and Dragic doesn't offer enough defensively where you can sort of pair him in, you could pair him in the backcourt with another score first guard. I just think that one of those guards have to be above average defensively, and Dragic, I think, is just about average if at best. So, you know, I understand the want to upgrade Goran Dragic. Like, if you could trade Dragic in a piece for Kemba Walker, I think you'd do it, depending on what that piece is. But to be honest, I think that both positions got to be up to upgrade. I think you've got to try to upgrade the Whiteside position, which I think is much easier. I think that's an addition by subtraction, to be honest. But with Dragic, I wouldn't say no to finding an upgrade there. I just think that Dragic is, like you said, he is a borderline all-star point guard who kind of got lucky to get into the all-star game. And there's if the Heat are going to take that next step, they need to find a lead scorer. And the best way to do that might be by dealing Goran. But otherwise, I think he's got a lot of value on the roster. But if they could find another way to find another a primary scoring option, that's about it. Let's do some Whiteside deals because those are always fun. Billy writes in with a bunch of them. He's got like a handful of them. So let's knock them out one by one. So basically what Billy, a longtime mailbag contributor, just was like, hey, I got a bunch of deals. Billy took maybe a few hours, dedicated a day, took a day off of work, and just said, I'm gonna just spend all day on the ESPN trade machine, and this is what he came up with. So let's pick this apart mercilessly. Let's start with one with the Brooklyn Nets, Mozgov and Lynn for Whiteside and Magruder.
So, you know, I understand ostensibly this is to create some cap space in the long term, but Mozgov is just as limited as Whiteside is at this point. He doesn't play much, even in Brooklyn. I know he's dealing with a number of little injuries here and there, but that was a bad contract he signed a couple seasons ago with the Lakers. As for Lynn, again, injury prone. The only reason he's in Brooklyn in the first place is because of the relationship he had with Kenny Atkinson, their head coach. And I don't know that he'd want to be traded anywhere. And what are you getting out of Jeremy Lin? Like, he's a fine player when he's healthy, but he's rarely healthy at this point in his career. And you're giving up on a young player like Magruder who can still offer some great value, I think. Like, just because his playing time was curtailed towards the end of the season, you know, as he came back from injury, I think you're still a chance of him stepping in and contributing as a role player off the bench. So why would you move somebody who I think, you know, I mean, I think Lynn is with a better guard at this point, but I think Magruder is a better value because he's young, because he has upside, because he's a better defender.
Because he's making $1.3 million compared to Lynn, who's making 12. Yeah, I just and Mozgov's also got three. He's got as many years left on his deal like as Whiteside. Yeah, two more years. So to me, that's a no. If I'm moving Whiteside for another center, yeah, you're just Lynn would be an expiring contract. So 2 years from now, you're saving quite a bit of money. You're gonna save about $10 million in that deal. I don't know that that's enough. I would ask for a draft pick from the Nets, and then maybe we could talk. Let's go to this next one from Sacramento. Zach Randolph, Kosta Koufos. For the same package, Whiteside and Magruder. To me, this is a little bit better.
Better.
Yeah. What do you think? Randolph.
I don't know.
Randolph has another 2 years left on his deal, too. So he's got, to me, if I'm moving Whiteside, the best case scenario is trying to find a deal in which you're getting an expiring contract so you can create some cap space for next offseason instead of two off seasons from now. So. Randolph and Koufos. I like Koufos. He's got a player option, though, so there's no guarantee that he's going to stay in Sacramento. It's up to him to stay in Sacramento or try to sign elsewhere, even though it's going to be worth about between $8 and $9 million next season, so he might just take it for the money. But Zach Randolph is another guy. I just don't know how much he's going to be able to contribute in today's league. Like, he was barely able to contribute in Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean, you're a big advocate of the Koufos locker room presence, but I don't know that it's enough. I mean, it's good to have somebody who's all in and can, you know, at least keep things light in the Heat locker room. I think there might be some minor camaraderie issues that need to be addressed, and I think a lot of those can probably be due to Hassan Whiteside's presence. But I don't know that Zach Randolph is the kind of guy that you want on your team at this point in his career with his limited game and his age, you know.
And that contract.
Athleticism, yeah. I mean, and make that kind of money. If you had an issue with Whiteside, at least there are nights where Whiteside still gives you something. I don't know Randolph can at this point in his career.
Let's go to one about with Chicago. He's got Omar Asik and Justin Holiday. For a son Whiteside, I would like to call a quick audible on this. I would say absolutely not to that, first of all.
Okay.
All right. And I think that the Heat could get Robin Lopez instead of a Sikh. I think that if the Bulls were wanting to trade Whiteside, that means
do it.
That
do it.
Oh, we would do it in a heartbeat, right? First of all, you get Holiday and Lopez, who are both expiring contracts. So if you don't like either of them after next year, you're done. You've got cap space next summer. If the Bulls are willing to take on Whiteside, that means they think that Whiteside is a part of like a core they could build around. Whiteside at center. You got your stretch four with Larry Markkanen. You've got, you know, maybe the foundations of a pick and roll game between Chris Dunn and Whiteside. You got Zach LaVine on the perimeter if they decide to bring him back. So I think that if they're willing to bring in Whiteside, they would also, that would mean they'd be willing to part with a guy like Robin Lopez. I would do it in a heartbeat if it was Robin Lopez and Holiday. Holiday got a nice guard off the bench, could replace Wayne Ellington possibly. If you're able to move Tyler Johnson in a separate deal, he would replace him. I would love that deal, but that would depend on if the Bulls even want Whiteside.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah. I mean, I would love for this to happen. Look, for Rolo, he's 3.5 hours away from his home in Orlando where he can go to, you know, Disney World and Magic Kingdom as much as he wants. That would be such a great deal for him. And just think of the Rolo versus Bernie fights that we can look forward to in the future.
Let's go. I mean,
that would be amazing.
And speak of a locker room presence, I mean, he would be awesome. He would be a great fit. And I want a guy who just sets really good screens. Is that so bad?
Yeah.
I just want a guy who sets screens. Robin Lopez and Olynyk in the front court would be great. All right, let's do these next few really quickly. I just want a yes or no because we've kind of talked about the players. Brandon Knight and Tyson Chandler for Whiteside and Richardson. Can I just...
No.
No, and I don't even think it would take that much. I think you could trade Whiteside for Knight and Chandler and be just fine, and I still wouldn't do it. And I think the Hornets, or I think the Suns would have to throw a draft pick in there for that to even work, and I'd still say no. The Hornets, Dwight Howard and Malik Monk for Whiteside and Richardson.
I've never been a Monk fan. He offers some shooting potential, but if they couldn't, you know, find a way to extract it from him in his rookie season, I don't know that Miami can develop it out of him. So I'd say no to that.
And especially, I wouldn't include Richardson in any of these deals. Biombo and Terrence Ross for Whiteside and Richardson. That's absolutely. Look, Billy, we really appreciate you, but man, that the Heat would get ripped off. I would say Whiteside for Biombo and Terrence Ross is a conversation, even without Josh Richardson in there, and even then. I don't love it.
I think you could get a lot out of Bismack. Look, I like Biz. Talking to him is great in Orlando. T. Ross, same thing. He's a really nice guy. Good presence in the locker room. Both of them are, to be honest with you. So I would hate the idea of covering Whiteside regularly, but I'll do it for my allegiance to Miami. I think it's a good fit there. I think that's a good.
So
one.
You would do it's it.
Whiteside for Biombo and Ross. Yeah, I think Miami should do it. Look, anything.
Biombo's got. Biombo has just like Whiteside, two more years after this season. Left on his deal, but Ross will be an expiring contract. Like, yeah, I would do it.
He's not
going to
score. He can't score, but you know what? He can defend. He can try. He's going to try his hardest, and it's a lot better than what we can get.
Terrence Ross and Deion Waiters on the same team. That'd be interesting. Washington trades John Wall, Ian Mahimi, Marcin Gortat for Whiteside, James Johnson, I'm assuming. He just put Johnson here. Richardson and Dragic. I would say no to that. They'd have to throw in like an Otto Porter or Kelly Oubre or something.
Why would it work in Miami?
No. San Antonio, here's the good one. Kawhi Leonard, Pau Gasol, Patty Mills for Hassan Whiteside, James Johnson, Deion Waiters, Bam Adebayo, and Josh Richardson. So that's Leonard, Gasol, and Mills. Basically, you're giving up Josh Richardson, Bam Adebayo, and James Johnson. And then you're throwing in Whiteside and Waiters for contracts.
Right. That's a tough one. It's the first step in a multi-year rebuild, but I don't know that Kawhi Leonard re-signs with his team if that's the case. So I would have to say no at this point, because at least you have these younger players under contract. So as tempting as it is to get a superstar like Kawhi Leonard, who we've talked about recently and his impact, you should absolutely go listen to our Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA, where we talked about the Kawhi Leonard situation there and the fact that there might be long-term ramifications that we haven't heard about regarding his injury. You know, he may never be the kind of superstar that he was supposed to be a couple of years ago, and he might never reach that point again. If what we're understanding is correct, that you know there might be some problems with his thigh or the tendons around his thigh, he may not necessarily ever be the kind of, he might never regain the form that he had earlier or last season.
Trading for Kawhi is kind of a low risk, high reward deal, only because he's basically an expiring contract next season. He's got a player option for 2019, but it's only really worth, I think, $21 million or something. Around that, you figure he's going to opt out and make more in free agency. Even if he comes out and doesn't have it, is like not 100% next season, somebody's going to pay him a bunch of money just because of the potential that he provides as an unrestricted free agent. So he's basically an expiring contract, sort of like a Paul George situation with what the Thunder did this season. But we're seeing how that worked out for Oklahoma City. Not saying that that necessarily would be the case with a guy like Kawhi, whose ceiling is still higher than Paul George. But if you're the Heat, I don't think that you can move your entire, like, almost the, like, half the roster, essentially, half of your rotation players for a guy who can come in, be on a below average roster plus him, and then just tie up your future in hoping that he re-signs. And even if he does re-sign, still not having a whole lot of cap space to do much more. Let's go to this next one. Last mailbag question. Taylor asks, if the Raps break up DeRozan and Lowry after losing to a bad Cavs team in the playoffs, what would a deal with the Raps from the Heat look like for DeRozan? You and I talked about this a little bit. We're struggling to find anything that's workable and realistic. It would have to include basically, I mean, we talked about it. It would from Miami's perspective, it would have to include like young players, but we don't think that Toronto would be looking for young players if they were to break up that backcourt, right?
Right. I think with Toronto and the fact that they've been on the cusp of reaching the finals for so many years, they're more in a win-now kind of mode. And trading away DeRozan, arguably their best player, would set them back. So they'd either have to get it. I mean, I think they would be looking for an upgrade, as you and I talked about.
Yeah.
It would have to be for a player like Kawhi Leonard, somebody who can make an immediate impact there and take him to another level, assuming he's back to full strength. They're not going to want a package of pretty solid Miami players to make up for the loss of DeRozan. If they were going to trade anybody, it would be Kyle Lowry, who is older, who is limited defensively. He's a solid player. He's a solid defender. But unfortunately, in the playoffs, you can see him get victimized because he's barely at 6 feet tall. And so he can be dominated by bigger guards, or when he's caught in a switch, it could be a problem. And again, because of his age, I think that's a bigger factor in why they would trade a guy like Lowry over DeRozan, who they just signed to a long-term deal.
Would you,
if they view as a future of the franchise?
If you're Toronto, would you trade Lowry for Kemba Walker?
Oh, that's a tough one. No, I wouldn't.
All right, just an idea. I would ask for Kemba Walker and a young player.
Malik Monk?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe like a MKG and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist who might be able to defend LeBron in the playoffs. I don't know. They've got OG, but no. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, well, there's a bunch of head coaching openings around the league, and we'll look at where former Heat assistant David Fizdale could end up when we come back after this break. Before we move on with the show, we want to take a quick break and tell you about our Patreon page. You can find it by going to patreon.com/lockedonheat. And we are humbly asking for people to commit to a monthly pledge to help us continue to improve the quality of the show. Thanks to you who have already supported the podcast, we have quickly reached our initial funding goal that allowed us to purchase software that improved the quality of the podcast. But we aren't just stopping there. We've added a new tier of supporters. For $5 a month, you'll get access to a bunch of goodies, including salary cap and depth chart projections, free agency player rankings by position, a running list of our favorite trade ideas, and whatever else we can think of. Just go to patreon.com/lockedonheat to get started. Again, that's patreon.com/lockedonheat. That's patreon.com/lockedonheat. Back with Locked On Heat, there's a bunch of coaching openings around the league, and according to Josh Robbins of the Orlando Sentinel, the Magic have added David Fizdale to their list of candidates. David, you've been around the Magic. Does Fizdale make sense for them and what they're looking for from a head coach?
I know you and I have talked about it before, that I think the factor that David Fizdale, or the thing that David Fizdale brings most to any team, is his ability to implement any kind of culture. And if that's the case, I think he is a good fit, because the one thing that has marked the Magic for the last few seasons is that they have never been able to establish any kind of identity. They've either traded away young players before they reached their potential. They had a glut at too many players at one position, and nobody really excelling in that role. They've been really mismatched. And so I think if you get a guy like Fizdale, you can get everybody to buy in, and that might work. Now, the problem with Frank Vogel was that he was too much of a quote-unquote player's coach. Like, he was always trying to be a nice guy there, and he never really understood how to get the most out of those players. Now, you know, most of the young players in those team, they've been with that team for a while. They don't know anything other than losing. So it's going to be a difficult challenge for whatever coach comes in there. For a guy like Fizdale, he'd have to come in there with the understanding that this is a continued rebuilding project, and it's going to be a couple more seasons, you know, assuming that some of their draft picks pan out. Before they end, assuming they can re-sign Aaron Gordon this summer, before they can take that next leap and be a legitimate playoff team.
And Fizdale was a coaching candidate when he was on an assistant with the Heat for a few years, and he kept saying he would only leave for the right situation, and presumably he was looking for a situation where he could win right away, and he thought that would be the case in Memphis. Obviously, it didn't work out. Orlando, like you said, is not that situation. Phoenix, where he's also a candidate, definitely not that. So if I'm Fizdale, you know, it depends on where his expectations are now. Maybe he would prefer a less pressure rebuild of a situation, somewhere where he really could. He tried to go to Memphis and add and create a new culture. That didn't work. He butted heads with superstars. So maybe he's after that experience, he's willing to take more of a rebuilding project where he can have a little bit more of a voice and have more of an influence on the organization. But if not, I don't see even. I mean, Orlando would be lucky to have him. But I think Fizdale is one of the top coaching candidates out there right now. And if he's got his pick, maybe he can find a better situation than the Magic. But if you're Fizdale, before we move on to our next one here, would you prefer Phoenix or Orlando?
Orlando, I think, because you have ties to Florida. You travel to Miami twice a year. I mean, I think it's a good situation for him.
All right, the Hornets continue to conduct interviews for their head coaching position. Haven't narrowed in on anybody, but Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting that Spurs assistant James Borrego is on the list. A Spurs assistant might be a good idea for the Hornets.
He's not really part of the Pop coaching tree. I mean, he was part of Jacques. Well, maybe he is, in that he started off with San Antonio, I guess, and then he kind of followed Jacques Vaughn when he took over the Orlando Magic head coaching position a few years ago. When Vaughn was fired, then Borrego took over for the last half of the season. He wasn't brought back. They hired Scott Skiles.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that didn't work out so well for Orlando either. This is what I'm talking about, that continued lack of identity. So Borrego's a good option. I think, you know, a lot of fans and a lot of players in Orlando liked his impact. He seemed like he had things in place there, and he's probably learned some nice tips from Popovich, so he's a good candidate. To me, I think the front office favorite there is probably Stackhouse, Jerry Stackhouse. Who has roots in North Carolina, who did such a good job with the Raptors 905, but he's probably the top candidate in Orlando as well, considering most of that front office worked with him when they were with the Raptors. So, he's probably got his choice of teams as well.
Yeah, I think for Charlotte, it's going to, you know, there's a big question on how they're going to move forward with Mitch Kupchak as GM now and what they're going to do with that rebuild. And I think who they hire as head coach is going to say a lot. If they hire a guy like Stackhouse, who might be willing to, you know, a guy who cut his teeth in the G League and might be willing to deal with more of a developmental situation, maybe right. if they hire a guy like Stackhouse, it might mean that they're looking to trade Kemba Walker and pair him with one of those big contracts that they have to get off the books and make some moves. Maybe but if they hire a guy like Borrego, I don't know. Is he a Brett Brown patient type who can get in there, just start coaching up young guys the right way and willing to deal with 2 or 3 years of just being bad before you can get good? It'll be interesting.
You've got so many personalities there on that Hornets roster, too. Guys like Howard and Walker and Batum, like these established veterans. I mean, do they want to play for a guy like Stackhouse who, you know, in Howard's case, he probably played when Stack was in the league.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, you would have to, if that were the case, I agree. You would have to combine Malik Monk with Howard to just try to get rid of Howard. You'd have to trade Kemba to get rid of a Nick Batum or an MKG or a Cody Zeller contract. You would basically have to clean house and move all of your young pieces that you have along with, you know, your larger contracts that you're trying to shed. And then basically just hope that you hit in the draft for the next couple of years. And that would be it. You're right, because I don't think Dwight Howard's going to want to deal with that. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. We will be back later this week. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Help share the show by telling your friends and retweeting our links on Twitter. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.